And we're live, back again with Around the Mat. I'm your host, Conscious Keelan. We've got a fun one today. We've got some new people joining. Actually, just one new face, the beautiful Caleb McAllister.
What's up, guys? Good to be here. Thank you for having me.
We also have joining us, Steven the Dream Eakin.
Boom. What's up, everybody? Happy to be back on another Around the Mat, man. It's my favorite show on YouTube, really. So I'm hyped.
And our returning professional expert analyst, Matt Scaff.
What's up, guys? I decided to dress down a little bit today. No big deal.
You look
just
comfortable.
Got back from prison.
Took last week off because I was in prison.
All right, and returning again, he's not fedorable today. He's just Brandon McCatherine.
It's regular old B Mac.
Yeah, well, hot girl summer's over. Mm. It's been officially declared.
Orc boy autumn.
It's orc boy autumn now.
All right, guys. So in case this is your first time joining, we're going to talk about some hot topics in the grappling community this week. And I'm going to rank them, give them points or minus points, or what we like to call poots. And whoever at the end of the stream ends up with the most points is declared the winner, and they will get a special moment to themselves to advertise whatever it is that their heart desires.
Like, say, if they wanted to advertise their new mount instructional,
then they would.
That would be the time to do it. Not necessarily right now would they talk about their amazing new mount instructional.
Right.
But maybe just at the end when they have time, that's when they could talk about how good it is and how great the reviews are and stuff.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. So moving right along, we're going to talk about the first topic. It says B Team Savior. So we know that the best team, quote unquote, in jiu-jitsu split up, and now we have an A Team and a B Team. Who on the B Team has the best chance at defeating Gordon Ryan? Brandon, let's start with you.
The best chance at defeating Gordon Ryan. Well, I know that most people are going to say that they think that it's Craig, but I don't think it is Craig. I think it depends on the rule set, how I answer. But I think probably it's Nicky Rod in the tournaments that matter to Gordon, which is ADCC, and that rule set. I think Nicky Rod's the real threat right there because he can score points. Now, can he submit him? I don't think he can necessarily. But can he outscore Gordon? I think he can outscore Gordon in that rule set, maybe.
Steven?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think a lot of people are going to assume that it's going to be Craig because he's the top guy outside right now in the world. But definitely under certain rule sets with the wrestling base, the scrambleability, if you will, of Nicky Rod, how hard he is to kind of control in that ADCC rule set. You got to kind of give him the nod in that. And then I think over the course of time, he's still got a lot of room that he could really improve in his submission game too, I think. So if you can add some solid submissions into a little bit of that wrestling and athleticism that he's had, he's probably the best guy to have the chance, in my opinion. And I'm not sure that Craig will ever be the guy that can beat him, really.
Caleb, what do you think?
I think that's a really good take that it depends on the rule set. Obviously, Craig would have a shot under especially EBI overtime. We've seen him come close before. But I think ADCC rules, Nicky Rod's chances are much higher. He has a substantial advantage, I would say, in the wrestling. And if he plays a smart game, hits his takedowns, stays ahead of the submission attempts that Gordon is going to be throwing at him, I think he has a very, very real shot under that rule set. I do think the wild card here, and I wouldn't put money on him yet, but ask me in 5 years, is Nicky Ryan. If he really is a part of the B team as he appears to be, obviously Gordon has a substantial size and strength advantage on him, but I would say from what I've seen so far, Nicky is showing signs that he will be more talented. And his wrestling up from guard is, I would say, much better than Gordon's already. In 5 years, it wouldn't shock me.
Scaff, what do you got?
You know, normally I'm kind of the guy that's doubting Craig Jones. I'm the guy that's like, you know, I think there's a lot of guys that can beat Craig in a particular rule set. I think submission only, he probably is the second or third best guy in the world right now. But I've seen something from Craig that has led me to believe that I think we're going to see Craig at next ADCC really just show out and become a star, like become the star that people want him to be because of his personality, right? Like people love Craig Jones because he's funny and he's super good, like humored and all this stuff. But Craig, if you see, if you're just kind of taking note what the B team's doing, I mean, everything he's doing is just leading him. It looks like it's going to lead him to possibly surpass Gordon. I mean, who's Gordon training with right now? He took Nicky Rod, who, look, that's his best big guy training partner. I mean, Craig and Nicky Rod were the two best big guys other than Gordon. So he's got Nicky Rod to train with. He's got Ethan. He's got Isaac Michelle. He's got his, you know, Gordon's brother. I think Craig is set up to surpass Gordon, honestly. It wouldn't shock me, you know, if Gordon's not training, and especially if he's focused on the dollar signs, if we don't see a kind of changing in the guard, especially when we talk about who the best submission grappler is. Now, again, currently we all know it's got to be Gordon Ryan, but I love everything Craig's doing. He's working on his wrestling. He's opening it up. He's training with everybody. I mean, you see those open mats. He's got 10th Planet guys there. He's got, you know, he's got everybody. The whole community seems like they're backing Craig Jones. And I think with that support, it's just going to take his jiu-jitsu to new heights.
All right. Y'all want to move on?
What y'all got?
So Giga Chikadze, he's been doing well.
Good pronunciation.
Is he a future champ? Does he have it in him? Or is he short? What do y'all think?
I think at 104, it's 145 he's at now, right? I think at 145 pounds, I don't see anybody faster than him. I mean, if you were going to pick up somebody and say, okay, who's faster than Giga, then maybe you would say Edson Barbosa, except that he just starched Edson Barbosa. He looked twice as fast as him, twice as quick. So I really thought that fight was going to be a lot closer than it was. I knew that Giga was very good, but I didn't know that he was going to come out and be faster and strike harder than Barbosa, especially at 145 pounds. So could he be the next champion? I think we need to know a lot more about his ground game and his wrestling before we can answer that question. But does his striking look to be up to the test? Yes, absolutely.
Steven?
Man, for me, my go-to guy a lot of times for like high-intensity fights has been Barbosa over the last few years. So I was really like taken when I saw this guy come through and just like put it on him. And he was checking those kicks or eating the kicks basically when he was throwing. Barbosa was coming right back, and he was just timing everything really well. And so I went back and watched a lot of his videos, and I think, you know, kind of what people are seeing as quickness is really his timing. Like he has really, really good timing. And he notices like things that seems like before they start to happen or as the exchanges are developing. And he kind of transitions really well between the things that are happening on the ground and then back on the feet. Like you'll see him disconnect a lot of times on the ground when things are getting a little bit funny. And, you know, basically like he said against Barbosa, when he let go of the choke, just to go ahead and let him stand up to finish with his hands, because it was probably the more efficient and easy way to do it. Will that make him the next champion? I don't know, man. You got guys like Volkanovski, Brian Ortega, Max Holloway, several others that are still up there that are at the top that could give him a hard run. So we got to see him get one more contender. But, you know, with that kind of fighting style that he's shown recently, he's definitely going to get to at least have a shot to see if he's going to be the champion, maybe at least with one more opportunity.
Caleb?
Some good points there for sure. I think that at featherweight, Giga's odds are better than if he were a weight class up or down. I'm not saying that I think he's going to be the champion, but I think he has a better chance there, because at featherweight, there's no real dominant, you know, Khabib-style wrestlers that can just mash him into the fence and beat the crap out of him from there. Now, that's not to say there's not good grapplers, but it's not that overwhelmingly dominant control style. That being said, the three names that that Steven just mentioned are really the question marks. Obviously, I don't think there's any question. Giga's the best striker in the division right now. After his statement over Barbosa, that pretty much goes without saying. The question is, I'd say especially Brian Ortega is the toughest style matchup for him. I would love to see that fight. If he can get through Brian, then I think his odds are much, much higher. But right now, in that fight, I would pick Brian Ortega over Giga just because Brian's control in the submission hunting sense is so good. Even though he's not a dominant wrestler, he's got a solid takedown game. And once he gets a hold of your neck, it's pretty much game over. I don't see Giga having sufficient positional or submission defense to survive that yet. I'm a big Max Holloway fan. Max is a very, very good grappler. His coach is actually one of my teammates by association. But Max loves boxing, and I see that being a rough style matchup for him just because Giga is such a good striker. Volkanovski, I could see that going either way, depending on the strategy and who came in with a better game plan. So I would say that Giga's odds of being a champion are somewhere around 30-40%. I wouldn't pick it, but I wouldn't be shocked by it either.
It's really weird. It's like 145 pounds. Like, has there ever been a dominant wrestler in that division? It's like the one division where we just haven't seen high level wrestling. We've seen a bunch of guys that are, you know, that have wrestling in their game. And, you know, you think about Volkanovski and Holloway, like they can do takedowns, right? But it's nowhere near the level that we see in some of these other divisions. And so you got to think if it's the title fights that we've seen over the past 5 years in that division, like you throw Giga in any one of those title fights, does he walk away every single time as the champion just because he is, I think, the best striker that we've seen in this division? Because, I mean, it looks like he's the best striker that the 145-pound division has seen since, I mean, Jose Aldo was, you know, a step above everyone. He looks like, you know, when Jose was dominating that division with his striking, it looks like Giga's that level above the current competition. If you guys are following what I'm saying, Giga just is sharp, man. He's technically, whether he's cutting angles or speed and just the way that he sets up his strikes. I mean, I think this guy is the future champion. And I think he's going to be the champion in the next three fights.
Whoa.
Hot take.
Bold.
All right. We got a question in the chat right here. Okay. It says, Dan Hardy stated that 10th Planet gyms tend to prioritize finishing over positional fundamentals. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it depends on the gym. I think when you say 10th Planet does this, you're trying to paint like thousands and thousands of people and over 100 gyms with the same brush now. It's not like it's all everybody's directly a student of Eddie at his gym anymore. You know what I mean? So like we're in Decatur, Alabama, we're developing, yes, we're more than just influence, but we're formed and shaped by Eddie and his philosophies. But at the same time, we train out here by ourselves, the day-to-day train. And that's what really determines what kind of grappler you are. So it depends on what that daily focus looks like at the gym. So no, I don't think it's fair to really paint unless you got a set curriculum across the board for everybody. And Eddie's tried to do that with the warm-ups a little bit, but no, I don't think I agree with that at all, actually.
Steven?
Oh, definitely not, man. I think that there's elements to it that people could say it's that way, but it depends on what the focus of the athlete is typically before you'll see maybe what that style is going to be. Because even within certain gyms, you'll see people with different kind of styles that they'll take to it, more heavy wrestling style based. That'll be more like, you know, get on top, stay on top, positional dominant, kind of look for the submissions from there. And then you'll see guys who do throw caution to the wind and just kind of go after the sub with no, you know, no fear for what may happen on the guard pass or anything like that because they've had success being that way. So I think what you see maybe is some of that stuff from the outside looking in, and it's maybe a judgment that people want to have. But a lot of that is probably just instructors letting their students be individuals and try out what they think is going to work for themselves. And they're just doing lots of reps and trying to see it in live competition.
And just training and doing what they think is fun.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a lot of the difference. And I think some of the 10th Planet schools like, oh, no, that interests you? Well, just go ahead then. Practice that. Yeah, that like you were going to be here for the next 5 years anyway. You got so much to learn. Why not just learn that thing that's got you excited right now instead of focusing on like getting through what you feel like are the drudging, boring parts? Just get in here and play and learn. Have fun.
Here's a question for Scaff I'd like to hear about. What is more devastating, Giga's body kick or Jose Aldo's leg kick?
Oh, oh man. I mean, you're going to have to say, a body kick. So few guys can find the body, right? The way Giga can find the body and kind of open up that with his feints and his just ability to kick high and low. I mean, it's like he finds that. I always think of the body kick because you could think of the famous Jose Aldo fights, right, where he fought, you know, whether it was like Uriah Faber or, you know, where he just incapacitated his opponents. But it took like 40 of those, right? Like he had to chop that tree down. Giga's changing the fight with two kicks. Yeah. Bah, bah. And I always think of Donald Cerrone when he got kicked by Anthony Pettis and just dropped, you know, he just literally shut off. And that, when I think about like the power of a well-placed body kick, you just, more people need to be going to the body, whether it's with their hands or their kicks. But oh, man, Giga's kick, that's what I'd say.
What about you, Caleb? What do you think?
Yeah, I can't argue with that. You will occasionally see people that get dropped with a single leg kick, but it's very rare. And at a high level, anybody, I don't care if you're the best leg kicker in the world, which, you know, Jose Aldo would be maybe it, maybe, you know, certainly top few leg kickers in the world. You know, I could take a handful of his leg kicks just by sheer cussedness and stubbornness. I don't think I could take a few body kicks from Giga. It's just, it damages a far more vulnerable part of the body, even if the skill and the power is equal. Like, I'd rather take damage to my leg than to my spleen or my liver, put it that way.
I got a question for you guys. What did you think about Khalil Roundtree?
That fight. Oh my God, dude.
Talking about leg kicks.
Yeah.
The whole first round of his fight had me going, he's gonna kill, you know, and then the way it ended with the stomp kick to the knee, I thought that was dope too. People want that outlawed, but I think that's crazy. Like if it's too easy to hurt somebody, well then you need to have a different stance to fight somebody. Some people are gonna throw that at you. That's part of fighting, apparently. If it's that easy. And if it's so easy to hurt somebody that we're going to take it out, we're not real fighting anymore.
Yep.
Well, it changes the fundamental stance that a lot of guys to use for MMA because they carry their front leg with their toe pointed more straight forward instead of
tell them to chill out.
That kind of sideways kind of karate stance that people carry, more like a Stephen Thompson style. So when they have that like toe forward on the front foot, it makes it where it'll lock the knee out more. Whereas if you have that kind of side stance, you can maybe move a little bit more laterally. Or turn your hips a little bit and take some of that side, you know, pressure off of it, I think.
Or you adopt more of a Muay Thai stance with that light leg.
That's just like everything, right? We can't handle this, so let's just make rules that make it illegal.
Yeah, man, get out of my face with that.
You know?
Yeah, dude.
You know, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but sometimes, you know, you get punched in the face. I mean, that does some pretty gnarly damage, too, so we should probably outlaw that from him as well.
Well, his nose... Old dude's nose just gets, you know, just turned this way, you know, completely just broken. And then, I mean, the doctor cage side was like, yeah, PCL, ACL, MCL, and everything. I know, but they just made it so much more. You're like, oh my God, this dude's nose is this way. His whole, basically everything shredded in his knees. You're like, God bless, man. Who wants to fight Khalil Roundtree after some of his performances? I think it's insane to ban a kick, particularly to the knee like that. But, man, I mean, maybe you should ban Khalil Roundtree from fighting.
Yeah, let's just ban Khalil Roundtree, dude. Yeah. He did that to my friend. Can't do that to my friend Eric. It's cold blooded.
Well, and the fact is that it's completely possible to both defend and counter that stomp kick to the knee. People aren't because they haven't really seen it used all that effectively, so they haven't bothered to practice it. But once you start making people pay for trying it, it's going to become less popular again, and that's just kind of the arms race of MMA. It doesn't mean you should ban it. It means that coaches need to teach people how to defend it properly.
And you see that even in just straight jujitsu, man. The Barambolo is unstoppable. The Barambolo is part of the fundamentals. The deep half, nobody knows what to do with it. If you don't know the deep half, you can't get a blue belt. 50-50, what is that? I've never even heard of that. That looks crazy. you'll never get good like that. Oh, well, you better know how to do it before you enter an intermediate tournament.
But there was a time when half guard was wild and crazy. I'm talking like basic old school closed half guard was like this revolutionary.
Now, I do remember when I first started. When I first started, I heard more than one person try to tell me that half guard, that this was their saying, they would go, half guard's not real, it's half mount.
Exactly.
That's how little faith they had in the half guard. It's called half mount because you're halfway mounted. You're not playing guard anymore.
And okay. That has changed.
Dude, the half guard's more important than close guard.
I agree.
All right, let's move on. Yeah, so let's that was Brandon's.
What?
You know.
He didn't make any good points.
All right. He never does. We just give him he gets pity points.
He gets points.
Bruh, I want you to look behind me. Look at my new setup right here. See this Mando helmet?
You are just
that's the man with the points.
High level.
That's good for like 3 points right there, isn't it?
I don't know. What you think, coach? Three?
All right. The Ultimate Fighter style tournament or whatever. It's for grappling only, and you have to choose a coach.
Okay.
Who would you choose as your Ultimate Fighter grappling coach?
I want Eddie Bravo. We're going to have a good time. I want Eddie Bravo.
All right. Steven, who you got?
I thought it was asking like who would we have for our coach if we were coaching on tough. But
I got same answer regardless.
I mean, that's like Eddie's the easy answer to say, and like maybe the default answer that's probably right. But if I was gonna have someone, I guess for me personally, I'd have to choose my own coach, Boogie Man. But if I was gonna go for like a MMA coach, I would probably get someone like maybe like Ricardo Laborio or someone like that. Has been in the game for a long time and been around a lot of really high level MMA too. So, you know, Eddie's definitely one of the tops. But I thought somewhere along the lines of Laborio also. But for straight grappling, I'm going with Boogie.
Well, okay, when it comes to Ultimate Fighter, you got two main considerations. One is, can they teach grappling that is effective and applicable for MMA, not just for straight jiu-jitsu? And then the other factor is, can they be entertaining? Can you get some good one-liners? Can you get some good TV out of them? So with that in line, I think the best balance of the two would be Gary Tonin. Because A, he's a very accomplished MMA fighter already in his own right, even more accomplished submission grappler. And more importantly, he has a very strong wrestling background and understands how to blend the wrestling with the submission grappling, which is absolutely essential in MMA. You're not going to be very effective in the long run pulling guard, you know, unless you're Damian Maia in MMA. And then, of course, everybody knows Gary Tonin is one of the most entertaining figures in jiu-jitsu. You're going to get a ton of great TV content out of him, which is good for the show. It's good for you because you get more of your team on the camera. It's good for everybody.
Solid choice. Okay.
So for the Ultimate Fighter, I would have to choose somebody that's done at the highest level and somebody that I think one of the biggest things, I know how much of a martial artist this guy is, and he's continued to learn and get better. And he's really starting to thrive and dig into being a coach himself. And that's Cole Miller. Dude, Cole Miller, man, had one of the best. I mean, just his jiu-jitsu for MMA. I mean, he's one of the best ever. I mean, I know at one point he was like number three in UFC history for submission finishes. And I know he's probably been passed because you got guys like Charles Olivier, who seems like he's submitting everybody and a couple of a handful of other guys. But I mean, he's still in the top 10. But it's really more like I know Cole, how he carries himself, how he's, you know, now coaching his own guys. And I think he'd be a phenomenal coach for the Ultimate Fighter or a scenario like that. Now, pure grappling coach, man, there's so many guys out there, but it's gonna have to be somebody for me that can mix modern jiu-jitsu with some of those old school techniques, you know, who can do pressure, apply pressure and kind of understand some of the invisible parts of jiu-jitsu, but also they can play the modern leg lock game, they can do all that stuff. And I mean, I hate to say this, but whose jiu-jitsu looks better than Gordon Ryan's? I mean, Gordon Ryan has the best blend of weight distribution, heavy on top. You take Hodger Gracie mixed with Eddie Cummings, like that's Gordon Ryan. And so I want him teaching that to my guys. Now, I might have somebody else there to kind of act as the captain and maybe the leader so we don't have Gordon's influence kind of bleeding out to the rest of the team. But to just, hey, who's going to coach my guys grappling? I want them to look a lot like Gordon Ryan.
How long is this tournament going to be, though? Like, is it a whole, like, 8 weeks or whatever, I guess, deal? I guess because some of that could really matter if they got to stay around them for that long.
Yeah, 8 weeks, yeah, like a tough. You know. Yeah.
You can handle anything for 8 weeks.
Not me. Not anymore. I'm bougie, son.
Egghead said he'd pick the guy with the best mount tutorial.
Ooh.
Well, we all know who that bump. Is.
Do we, yeah, yeah, that's who I picked.
I think
hey, man.
Are there any new mount tutorials out that we would need to be aware of?
Well, just this one that I mean, it's no big deal, but
okay.
I released one. Now
that you mentioned, I've heard some pretty amazing things about that, possibly from my own experience.
Boom, there you go. Me and Caleb rolled the other day. I had one hand. He only beat me 7 times. It was good.
Not quite how I remember it. I appreciate it, though.
There are some countries out there without BJJ. Right off the top of your head, like, what do you think about that? Does it make you want to go put BJJ out there? Do you think that there's not that many countries without BJJ? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, how many countries do you guys think don't have? Like, I guess that, like, let's start with, like, how many countries do you guys think don't have BJJ? I'm very interested in that. Like, what percentage would you say?
Half.
I'd say more even than that.
Yeah,
man, that's wild.
I'd say the majority of countries don't have an extensive established jiu-jitsu scene.
Oh, yeah. If you're talking about like have an actual,
like gyms, competitions, what have you.
Really, yeah. Like have a thriving or even like a, yo, you can go here and get pretty good because there's right. enough competition in the room. It's not going to be, that's going to be way less countries than that.
Right.
Because like, you know, I don't know any of these places for sure, but like say some island out in the Pacific, like they got a jiu-jitsu gym, but there's 7 people and the instructor's a purple belt. That doesn't mean they can't get good, but it's going to take them a lot longer, you know?
Right. And that's not really what I would call having like an actual jiu-jitsu scene. Like if there's not multiple schools, competitions, etc.
But what was the question though? Exactly. Just how many countries don't have it?
Well, we're doing SCAPS variation first, I guess.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, so there's like almost 200 countries in the world. I mean, would you think that, 25 have jiu-jitsu, 50, 100?
Yeah. How many do you think? 50 to 75 countries have jiu-jitsu.
So it's not like 50 even being generous.
I think it's at least 100.
I'm with you, Steven. I think it's 100. I think it's 100, like right around give or take 10. 90 to 110 would be my guess.
At least some.
Do we have a way to get this answer, or are we just guessing?
Hmm. Hey, but just think about ADCC trials and stuff. How many places around the world are represented there? And, you know, maybe there's still like the major.
Not many.
There's still like around the whole world?
Yeah, dude. What do we got? The Asia trial. We got the Oceania trial with Australia. We got one trial for the whole country of Brazil, which has, 500, 800 million people, something crazy like that. So, yeah, the whole country of Brazil has one trial. We got 2 in the States. Where are the other ones?
No, Brazil has 2 trials.
Okay, 2 trials for 800 million people.
2 in Europe.
America, and so then North America only has 2, so, I mean, it's the same, right?
Well, and here's the thing, too, and this is kind of piggybacking off of what Steven's saying. I know I've been saying that the whole time here that I think that jiu-jitsu is not all that established around the world, you know, once you get beyond the most obvious powerhouse countries. But that does not mean that grappling isn't. And I think that's a very different consideration.
You're going to be able to find judo in way more places.
Something. I mean, for crying out loud, like virtually every country in Africa has a form of submission wrestling or wrestling of some kind. grappling has been in existence for as long as humanity has been in existence. So that's one of the reasons that ADCCs are the most respected tournament in our sport, is because it's not just jiu-jitsu. Obviously, it's mostly jiu-jitsu, but yeah, it's submission wrestling. And
well,
I think as time goes by, we're going to see more of that.
It's only mostly jiu-jitsu because mostly jiu-jitsu wins.
True. Like, that's very true.
When we started watching the ADCCs, when we first started, there would be wrestlers in there that didn't have any kind of jiu-jitsu background other than they'd started trying to learn submissions. There'd be judokas, you know what I'm saying, catch wrestlers. So,
but that's starting to come back around now because, you know, obviously Nicky Rod being one of the most obvious examples of people who aren't
trained jiu-jitsu.
Amazing at jiu-jitsu, but he's a good wrestler and he had great strategy of how to play to his strengths. And I think we're going to see more of that, where people who aren't great at jiu-jitsu are going to find ways to win under that rule set, whatever type of grappling they call what they do.
At least 100.
I hear you. I think it's around 100, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was more. I just remember like hearing like, I think it was like Josh Hinger did like a Northern Africa seminar tour for Atos. And it was like, there's Atos locations in like Algeria and like all those, whatever, you know, the top of Africa, Morocco and Egypt. And I was like, what?
And I mean, the Middle East has a big jiu-jitsu scene, obviously.
Yeah.
Middle East jiu-jitsu is big.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Northern Africa was basically attached to the Middle East. You know what I mean?
I mean, probably.
Africa's a big old country, boy.
Yep.
I'd be shocked if there was Atos Sudan. It's like, I don't think Sudan has jiu-jitsu.
I don't think they got one in the Congo, you know?
Yeah.
Followers from Uganda, they message me all the time.
Are they trying to sell you geese?
No, they just want to talk.
I got folks from, I got jiu-jitsu fans in Algeria for sure. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely.
Yeah, North Africa, Middle East, I definitely see it there.
Stuff, but they still haven't.
If we're talking about one school, you know, I could hear maybe 100, 120 countries have jiu-jitsu. But if you're talking about like a place where you can, like, I could have the competition experience as well, that's not going to be very many countries.
Is jiu-jitsu too expensive for third world countries?
No, because jiu-jitsu itself is not expensive. The market for jiu-jitsu is expensive. Like, it's especially not expensive. It's not expensive for you to come to my house and roll a mat out in the backyard and let me whoop that tail. That's free.
Dude, you got a nice grassy lawn. That'll do just fine.
Yeah, but you still have to learn it. So let's say you wanted to pick up that mount instructional from old Brandon McCathern here. Yeah, I would cost. I mean, some of these people, right? I mean, that would be like their 2 months wage.
Well, then they can just get on my YouTube channel because that's free. And there's so much content on my YouTube channel that you could learn a lot about jiu-jitsu from there for free. Or if you wanted to pay 99 cents a month, maybe, and become a bread eater, join the channel. You could see the classes live. It's just something you could think about. It's like I've thought of this problem before, and I've tried to come up with solutions to it.
Not to mention, I mean, what Scaff's saying is kind of like saying that if you can't afford like gourmet, high-end, $20 a cup espresso every morning, then you can't afford coffee. I mean, you can get cheap coffee and make it yourself at home, and maybe it ain't quite the same experience, but you're still getting coffee.
What are you saying about my Mount Dominance instructional right now, Caleb?
I'm saying that is the gourmet espresso.
Oh, okay, got it.
That's the good stuff.
Now I understand.
But just because not everybody can get, you know, every instructional on the planet, you know, especially amazing Mount instructionals from Brandon McCathern, or, you know, buy $200 gis or whatever else you can spend money on, go to seminars every other weekend. Like Brandon said, you can get a couple of buddies, look up some YouTube channel information, and get a solid handle on the fundamentals for no money. And then whatever money you want to spend beyond that is up to you. But that's a luxury, not a requirement.
Talk them.
Yeah, you too could become a bread eater.
Smells like bread in here.
Oh, glorious.
All right, let's move on to Derek Brunson versus Darren Till. It happened this past weekend. Darren Till lost. It was by rear naked choke.
What was it by?
Rear naked choke, turns out.
Oh, huh.
Yeah, the highest percentage submission in the UFC. Not a big deal. But no. What I wanted to talk about is two things. A, Derek Brunson's grappling abilities and how good they are. And then B, how poor Darren Till's are. Let's hear it.
Well, Darren Till's getting submitted a lot these days. He's getting put he got put down. Who put him down in the Darce? Who was that one?
Tyron Woodley.
That was Tyron Woodley. He's getting put down in his subs a lot. I think what we see out of Darren Till is that he's a prize fighter, but maybe he's not a martial artist. You know what I'm saying? I don't know that Darren Till is working on all of his skills to become the highest level martial artist that he can be. Now, listen, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe he's just not picking up on the jiu-jitsu as fast as we feel like he should. Maybe he's working really hard on it, but it's also possible that he's working real hard on being a main attraction as his number one focus. And that involves becoming super exciting, not necessarily super effective. He's going to have to level up his grappling if he's going to stay at the top of the food chain. This is my thoughts.
Steven?
I'm not super impressed with either one of their grappling. I guess I would say they're both really, really good fighters, great fighters. And again, I might hate to keep saying the same stuff that I've said before, but like the level of overall like submission grappling, I guess, in the UFC is pretty low. Brunson is just a better wrestler for sure than Till. And man, he did the same thing that guys have been doing since probably, I don't know, the early 2000s, Randy Couture and stuff, got in half guard, sat on that leg, beat him up, softened him up, got into the next round, same thing over again. Then finally got the opportunity when it was late in the fight and he didn't really have anything left to fight back with, and then got the rear naked choke. It's a pretty classic MMA style that still, I guess, works against guys who prize themselves, I guess, as just strikers and think that they're going to be able to just get out of there every time without having a strong grappling base, at least some solid wrestling or something. You saw him trying to sprawl a couple of times, but it was pretty weak, man. He never even got his feet back. He had, you know, he never even moved away when he was trying to sprawl and stuff. So, I mean, maybe he's working on it, but to be at that level, to be one of the elite guys, I mean, I guess maybe being a prize fighter means that you're mostly just trying to get paid and being seen. But
you're fighting for a prize,
right? That's what I'm saying. Maybe that's what that is. But still, at the end of the day, it's just not the way to longevity for sure. He took a lot of damage that he doesn't need to take if he wants to keep making those prizes long term. And his stock definitely went way down after that performance, because it was not impressive at all.
How many fighters do you think long-term? Would you say it's 0% or less?
There's some that do for sure. Now what level do we see that make it far? Probably not that many. Most of the guys that probably have a plan end up getting out at a certain point before you hear about them hanging on too long.
Caleb, what do you got?
Well, here's the thing. Every stereotype exists for a reason, and I'm not trying to get canceled here or anything, but...
I'm trying to get you canceled.
Yeah, I mean, that happens a lot on this show, right? Here's the thing. Speaking from my own personal experience, if I have a opponent that I'm getting ready for who's Brazilian, I know odds are he's not going to have a very sophisticated leg lock game. And if I have an opponent who's from the UK, I know he's probably not going to have great takedown defense. Now, are there exceptions? Of course. There are amazing leg lockers from Brazil, and there are amazing wrestlers from the UK. But stereotypes exist for a reason. So I'm a big fan of Darren Till, and obviously there are great grapplers in the UK, but they are not as many or as accessible as, say, in Brazil or Russia or the US. So I think that we are seeing that is starting to hurt him as he tries to kind of get to that top level of being able to challenge for a title. And goodness knows, Israel Adesanya has been wanting to fight Darren Till for a while. He keeps telling him, put a couple wins together so we can make this happen. And that would be a wildly entertaining lead up to a fight between the two of them, just personality wise. But for crying out loud, Darren's going to have to learn how to stop a takedown and defend a submission. And again, I say that as somebody who's a fan of him. I want him to do it. And it's just sad to see a guy who's not quite reaching his potential because of those holes in his game.
Man, can y'all believe that Caleb said he hates Brazilians and Englishmen?
Yeah.
Caleb McAllister said that. Y'all believe that?
It's on tape, right?
Yeah.
What do you guys? Yeah.
So, I hope it's not as racist as what Caleb said. Yeah. But go ahead.
Yeah. So let me one up that. So okay. I don't want to get canceled. Oh, wow. No, I'm just kidding. I really want to talk about Derek Brunson. Because Derek Brunson, 37 years old, it was really funny. I've been seeing the memes of like yellow-haired, bleached-haired Derek Brunson has entered the realms of like TRT Vitor and, you know, like kind of some of those famous. I thought it was so funny because Derek Brunson, since he started bleaching his hair, he looks amazing, man. I think Derek Brunson, I don't know if there's TRT in the bleach or what. It's seeping into his head and whatever he's doing, man, he's looked incredible. And he made Darren Till look very average. And I know Derek Brunson comes from that Northeast. He trains up there in that kind of Northeastern part, with a bunch of those guys up there. And they always have great grappling. And his jiu-jitsu, like, obviously wrestler, but his jiu-jitsu is pretty darn good, you know. And it's not to the level of like Aljamain Sterling, right? Like Aljamain Sterling is a very good jiu-jitsu practitioner as well as wrestler. Derek Brunson is a really good wrestler that is now he's a good black belt. He's definitely not exceptional. I don't think Derek Brunson could like teach like an incredible like jiu-jitsu seminar, but I really think he's blended his wrestling, like it's obvious he's blended his wrestling now with his jiu-jitsu. Like it's really starting to click for him, and it was just a beautiful rear naked choke, and it's definitely got me thinking, like, can this guy upset Israel Adesanya? Now I by no means would bet any money on Derek Brunson to beat Israel Adesanya. He looks too small, but we've seen the recipe. We saw what the 205-pound champ did to Israel Adesanya and just taking him down and hold him down. If anybody in this division is going to do it, it's going to be Derek Brunson. And, I mean, I'm definitely more interested in that fight than really any other in the division at this point.
So let's kind of talk about that a little bit. They've fought before, Derek Brunson versus Izzy, and we all know how that one ended. Yeah. Derek Brunson got knocked out. Let's talk about the second fight. Does it go different? Do you think that Derek Brunson was taking Izzy for granted a little bit? Like, oh, this guy's just talking a bunch of mess. Now Izzy's the champion and Derek will come in with more respect and maybe more of a game plan, not just try to get in a firefight and the wild Derek Brunson that we used to see. Do you think that he will be more of a grappling heavy style whenever they go for the rematch? How do you think it goes?
The same way dink dink sleep. That's the way I think it goes.
I think it's going to be a competitive fight. I think it's going to be a really good fight. Obviously that fight happened so long ago and now we've got a rejuvenated Derek Brunson. I think he comes in and I think he shocks some people with his performance. Now, like Brandon said, it could be a quick finish. I mean, we got Israel Adesanya, one of the top three or four strikers in all of the UFC, going against a guy that has been known to be wild, but it seems like that's in the past. I mean, you would have thought that Darren Till, like if Derek Brunson was going to like be wild, like he just looks so calculated and just stuck to the game plan so well and got the finish. I mean, he looked really good, man. I think he could possibly get the upset.
Step out. That's a step out.
I just think, honestly, though, the style, like I said, if he could get that same kind of style going on where if he can get his hands on him, get him down, maybe get in that top half guard, start softening him up and making him have to wrestle up a few times, start taking those percentage points away, you get deeper into that fight, man. He's got a really good shot. I definitely think he does. If he gets hit early, though, we could definitely see him get put on skates and be on his way out the door pretty fast. But what we saw against Till, if he can do that again, you know, get him in, get him down consistently round after round and put him on his back and in bad positions, I think Brunson's got a shot to be the next champion. But the odds just don't say that that's what's going to happen.
Probably. No, dude. And Israel's twice the striker that Darren Till is.
That's a good point. And we saw right before Derek Brunson got his last takedown that led to the rear naked choke, he was rocked. I mean, Darren was about to finish the fight, and Derek Brunson had a last-ditch takedown that resulted in the finish, but he was rocked on the feet.
Definitely. I agree with that.
Caleb, we've seen these types of rematches before where a fighter beat a challenger before he was champion, and then they had a rematch when that championship had been secured. And we've seen it go both ways. Most recent example would be Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor, where Poirier got run over when Conor was a challenger and then was mentally and physically prepared for the rematch and honestly dominated both of the second and third fights afterwards. Now, on the other side of that coin, we've seen one of my early favorites, Rich Franklin versus Anderson Silva, where Rich got run over. No idea how good Anderson Silva was, didn't know he was who we now know Anderson Silva to be. And then in the rematch, it was just as bad. Nothing changed. Anderson starched him again. So the question is, with Brunson and Adesanya, which one of those would we be looking at? And I think it would be the second. I do think that Brunson has a better chance than most to take that title from Adesanya. But we also know that Adesanya, his style matches up better with stocky, powerful, wrestling heavy power punchers than anything else, because he's a sniper. He picks them apart. He did it the first time, he would do it the second time.
All right,
we've got to talk about Patty, right?
Oh yeah. That's a good one. So Patty the Batty, as he is called, what do y'all think? Overhyped or justified?
Well, he's definitely overhyped. Definitely overhyped, but it's fun, so I'm into it. I thought he was super fun, but I mean, he got hit hard a couple of times running in there with his crazy Beatles hair. So he needs to settle down just a little bit. But man, he's not wrong. He's the next star, but he's got to make sure that he doesn't get slept. I mean, Sage Northcutt was the next star too. You know what I'm saying? He was beautiful, and he could do flips, and he just couldn't fight. That was the problem. So we'll see what happens when Patty the Batty gets a hold of some real baddies. I think, you know, if he don't drop his chin a little bit, he's going to find himself waking up staring at a doctor.
Scott?
I agree with that, but at the same time, here's the thing. Everybody who debuts in the UFC with a lot of hype behind them pretty much universally has a rough go of it at first.
Not Anderson Silva, the guy you brought up earlier. He came
true,
in.
True, but I don't remember Anderson having. I don't remember Anderson having the hype that Patty did. I'm not saying Patty's anywhere close to Anderson's skill set, but I don't remember him having that much hype behind him when Anderson debuted.
Conor McGregor did.
Conor did. Yes, there's no question about that. But here's the thing: although Patty made some, goodness knows, some major mistakes in that fight, like you said, he still finished it. He still won. So to be able to deal with debut nerves, octagon jitters, and still put his opponent away, I mean, there's something to see here. Add that to a terrible haircut that everybody remembers, and he is marketable. There's no question about that.
Look, he's fun to watch. I'm in. I'm 100% into the story. I'm just not ready to crown him the future champion or anything. You know what I mean?
Let's
see a few more things, but did I love? Well, I loved everything about it. I told Lindsay, I was like, "Oh, I'm a Patty the Batty fan, no question about it."
I love the way he talks. If all we get here is Patty is the Darren Till of the lightweight division, I'm not complaining.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Yep.
Yeah, he's the new cash cow lad.
And that would be a great career, right? If he becomes the Darren Till of the lightweight division, that's a great career, and he's going to make lots of money. Now, have you guys seen Patty's highlights? Have you seen those flying triangles that guy's hit?
Oh, yeah, I have seen that.
Oh, my. Like, I didn't realize he's hit multiple flying triangles in MMA fights. If he hits a flying triangle in the UFC, dude, I'm going to go crazy. Like, that will easily be one of my three or four favorite UFC moments of all time. I've been dying to see a flying something like a triangle be hit in the UFC. And I think he's the guy that could do it. He's a wild man, but he's getting knocked out. I mean, there's so many heavy hitters at 155. I hope they take this guy slowly, and I think they will. I think he's going to go the I personally think he's going to be the Sugar Sean O'Malley of the 155-pound division.
There we go. I think that's the move.
They're going to bring him along.
Sean O'Malley is – I like Sean O'Malley. Dude, I like Sean O'Malley a lot, but he's very – I don't care. I'm not trying to fight a top 10 guy. I think that's what Patty needs to do. I think he needs to get about five or six highlight finishes, one of those being a flying triangle, hopefully, and before he even thinks about stepping up into a real, especially a contender. I mean, man, you think about some of those 155 pounders. I mean, you imagine what a guy like, I mean, even just Dan Hooker would have done.
Oh, no, that would have been a tough day at the office.
Man, this kid looks great, right? He's really exciting. We've seen a lot of people like that that came and been super exciting, very like came on the scene really hot. And I agree, though, you want to kind of take the time to nurture those kind of like personalities maybe more than you've seen when they got maybe thrown out too fast to the deep water and they get kind of chewed up in a lot of ways with too much hype too fast. But when given the time to go through like the ranks, so to say, starting with like the CB level fighters in the UFC and then trying to work up towards that A level over the course of a couple years, then you could see someone really like develop the ability to become a champion. But with the way that he's fighting right now, definitely, like you guys say, he's probably going to get knocked out by one of these top guys if they get thrown in there too fast. But if they give him the right time to build up with the right opponent, it's kind of like a, I hate to say it, but more of like an older boxing style where they would give you.
Yeah, that's right.
Like if you needed to fight a puncher, you'd fight a puncher. If you needed to fight a speed guy, then you fight a speed guy. If you needed to fight, you know, this kind of guy, then you fight that guy. As you built your way up, you got to go through all those different kind of levels on the way through. And so if the UFC's smart, that's what they'll do. And I think that's kind of what they've done more since they sold to this new like promotion company instead of being just like the fighters promotion kind of deal. Where they're really looking to get these personalities over for a long term instead of just getting them beat up and selling tickets right now.
So, Keelan, while you calculate these points here, I got a little
announcement. There's my point right now
that I want to read. You didn't get one. Don't worry about Bing. That. All right, so I want to read this while Keelan calculates the results and finds out that I'm the winner. All right, so this is from my friend Joanie Chamberlain. She runs a school over in the Atlanta area and the Kennesaw, Georgia area. And she had her best friend passed away from neurofibromatosis. So now I don't know a lot about this condition, but I do know it affected my friend and she wants to put together this event. And so I figure a lot of you watching, and even you may even want to bring some people up for this thing. This sounds cool, right? It's a really cool way to do a fundraiser. So they're doing this event in her honor. It's called the NF Endurance Event. It's 10 10-minute rounds, and you have to raise $100 for the charity to be able to participate.
That's cool.
So, you know, you get kind of get people to go, oh, you do $10 for every round that I roll, or, you know, like a roll-a-thon sort of thing, okay. I guess. But she'll have more information on it, and I got the information here. They said if you can't make it, you just want to donate money, you can purchase rash guards, and her Venmo is at Joanie-RiseUpJJ. She just needs to Venmo her with the size. Joanie, Joanie-RiseUpJJ. And then silent auction, if anybody wants to put anything into the silent auction to support this, you could just hit her up at that on Facebook or whatever. And she said all the donations will go to the Children's Tumor Foundation and Mariel's family for their funeral funds. So I wanted to make sure that we mentioned that and try to get that information out there. More information coming as I get more information about it, I'll let you guys know. But I did want to mention that we were going to try to support that. So
awesome.
We love you, Joanie. All right, go ahead, Keelan.
Quick shout out to Kai.
Oh, what's up? Whoop, 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 super chat.
He said at least they have choke defense. They may not have wrestling, but they have choke defense.
Yeah. Mm. Poot him. Poot Kai.
Sorry. All right. So we've tallied up the scores. We have a close race here today, guys.
It's
There is definitely a loser.
Oh, no. It's me. The way he's smiling, I can tell.
And the loser happens to be, I don't have the drum roll anymore. We'll get it back. But the loser is Brandon McCatherine.
Oh, man, that surprises me.
9 points in last place, Brandon McCatherine. And in first place, we have a tie between everyone except for Brandon.
Yes!
Yes! Team. You hit the field, you won.
Everyone had
that's
10
cold.
Points.
The delivery was super cold, man.
Everyone had 10 points except for Brandon.
And Caleb died. Like, Caleb did so. He beat me so bad he just left.
He died a champion, at least.
He's trying to get his refund for his mount.
All right. So let's start with Steven. What do you want to tell the people, Steven?
I guess kind of in the same vein of what Brandon was talking about a little bit, we got a couple, like a week or so left on a raffle thing that's going on for Zach Edwards, who passed away from his brain cancer like a week or so ago. If you guys look up at Tex_Jitsu on Instagram, there's links to a GoFundMe for Zach and his family. Any donations you give to that enter you into a raffle. And it's got like dozens and dozens of things that people can win from a, you know, part of being the trip to our trip to Costa Rica in October on to like rash guards and private lessons with like all levels of people up and down the community. So if anybody wants to, please jump on something like that. That's something I would rather promote right now. Go over to Tex_Jitsu on Instagram. Follow that and help. That would be really great.
In the same vein that Steven's talking, just thinking about Zach Edwards, I just want to spend a couple seconds really talking about how much Zach meant to the community and really his samurai spirit. I mean, Zach was one of those guys, one of those rare martial artists that would go out of his way to always challenge himself. And he was always looking to challenge himself. And whether it was different rule sets or training against or competing against higher level grapplers, I mean, this guy was always, as a blue belt, looking to test himself against higher ranked guys. When so much of the community now kind of hides behind, you know, whether it's their rank or hides behind, you know, just kind of stays in the gym. And I think we can all kind of take a lesson from Zach. And I mean, this guy was battling with cancer and did the PGF. I mean, think about that. This guy had brain cancer and did 15 matches against, you know, savages from all over the country. And he never once quit. He didn't think about it. And I think it really makes his PGF performance so special. And it'll be something I always remember whenever I think about, you know, things getting tough. I'll think about Zach kind of battling through and you know, the way he handles himself. And it's just a really beautiful thing. So support Zach. Definitely check out Steven's, you know, the thing Steven's doing. So Zach's the man.
Yeah.
Brandon, I guess we could let you say something if you wanted to.
No, I'm good. I don't want to follow up that. I'm good.
Well, peoples, thank you for watching another episode of Around the Mat. Make sure to tune in next Thursday at 1:30 or 2 p.m. and we'll do it again.
And make sure you're subscribed on the actual audio podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you do your podcasting. BJJ365. It has this, it has our show, it has the PGF Insider, and we're looking to add more jiu-jitsu related content to that audio podcast network. BJJ365. Subscribe. 5 stars on iTunes. Don't give them 1 star. Love y'all.